Good evening. Tonight we're going to talk about the idea of suffering for someone else's choice, the adoption of Jesus. Before we jump into our lesson tonight, I want to take a little aside and try and pull this together. So you're just going to have to work with me. I learn by doing. So when I need to learn something, I have to do it. You can tell me till you're blue in the face, and I will not know until I start doing it. And so that's how I teach. This idea of compassion and helping the hurting. How do we help the hurting? I remember as a young man wanting to find a wife. And I remember driving down the road and looking at the sky and saying, I wish God would write a name in the sky so I would know what I'm supposed to do. And I remember the feeling of not seeing a name there and thinking, well, there must not be an answer, a physical answer. When I got the text, when Lee, I think he texted me, or maybe you called me, I forget. It two and two came together, the ideas came together in my mind. Because to help with compassion, to be a companion of the hurting, and to help those who are suffering, there is no magic answer written in the sky how to do that. But that doesn't mean there isn't an answer. The answer has to be built. And you have to use tools. Every job you take and have to do is doable when you have the tool. DeWalt has figured that out. Milwaukee has figured that out. And I am sure glad they're on the scenes while I'm alive, because they make doing jobs so much nicer. But there's two tools that we have that are standing right in front of us. They're in the Bible, and I'm sure we all know them. We use them. I'm confident when I tell them to you, you're going to know these two tools. They're found in the chapter of Psalms 23. The tool is God's rod and God's staff. When I was asked to come here, I looked forward to it from day one, because I've worked with some of these boys here. I've worked with some of the product of this church. And you, this church is doing something right. The product coming from this church is blessing. When they come to Oregon, your boys are a blessing to us. They're fun boys to have. They do their job, but they know the Lord, and it's enjoyable to work with them. And so something's happening. You're doing something right. Maybe you don't realize it. Maybe like those Amish people. At Christmas time, you don't realize what you have. You don't realize the ability to build the answer to this problem. It's here. It's right here. So I thought we'd use the tools first, and then we'd go over what the tools are. So we've used the tools for three sessions now, and we're going to use them for one more session. But we're going to talk about what the rod is and what is the staff. All through the Bible, God's rod it comes to life, it buds, it holds back the water, it turns the tide of the fight. The rod of God is the Spirit, His Holy Spirit power. It's the power that comes out from God. It's His voice, it's life, it's the spiritual life. It's what makes a church alive. And you know by now, when you look at me, you see the image of God. And if I'm on God's ball team, you know you can trust my words that that I understand the divine will of God, and I can trust that from you. And you understand that I've heard God's voice in the dark, and I'm telling you, I'm prophesying to you. You know that by looking at me. And every one of you, you look at each other, and that's what you have. You have that ability that's in you. That's a promise. That's true. And the staff is the physical structure. So we're here. We're in this church. We get into small groups. We can't find an answer, and we can't have Christmas without going to a house and having turkey and everything that Christmas is. So it's the physical, it's what physically has to happen for us to be able to be comforted by God. And you have it. You already have these tools. You've been to Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot, wherever the rod and staff comes from, it comes from the Bible. But you have those tools. And so every problem God brings into your church, the answer isn't send it for counseling. The answer is, let's get together and let's hear this problem. Let's understand this problem. God has promised you, He will give you an answer. And you already know that. When I say this, it's making sense. I can feel it. So let's build something. Let's try to finish up here what we've been building in these four sessions with these tools. Let's all close our eyes and sing the first verse of Just As I Am. Just as I am, without one plea, but that thy blood was shed for me, and thou bid me come. Let's break into Psalm 23 and say those verses together. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. Yea, leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Choosing to take up our cross when it's someone else's fault. Our Bible character tonight is going to be Jesus. We're going to not have a question that we talk about tonight, because when we go into our small groups tonight, we're going to discuss the rod piece of it. We're going to assess what the stories, what we've been hearing, and we're going to try to workshop that a little bit. And when we come back from our small groups, we're going to ask that two people from each small group talks when they come back. The first one will tell us what they heard in their small group as a common theme in all the trauma stories. And the second one will try to help us see how to apply comfort found in Psalm 23. So you have We have two components we're going to work at when we go to our small groups. We're going to try to understand what was the common thread. Are there any common threads? And if there are, in the trauma stories. And the second is, how do we comfort? What's the comfort found? What comfort did God have for us? Our adoption verse tonight is, who are the Israelites? Who are Israelites to whom pertaineth the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law and the service of God and the promises? Romans 9:4. And in Galatians 4:5, to redeem them that are under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. Thank you for your devotions, Kevin. I think we saw in the story of Joseph how he was adopted by his biological father. And I think we saw in Ruth and Esther how they were adopted by unbiological, by people that weren't necessarily related to them. Jews and Gentiles. When we first meet Jesus as a baby, Joseph is before he's even born, and Joseph isn't sure what to do about the situation. And he has a dream. And wouldn't it be nice if we'd have those dreams sometimes? It would just clearly tell us what to do. But Joseph had this dream, and the angel came and he said, Joseph, don't be afraid to take this project on. And I think that's true. I think that's still true for us. I think we should hear that. And I think you are hearing it here. I commend you. You're doing it. You're hearing that. That's why I'm here. You're hearing that voice that, don't be afraid. It's painful. It's hard. Buildings don't build themselves. Answers don't come out of the sky. You have to build those answers. But don't be afraid to do it. And so Joseph said, the Bible says Joseph took him in and loved him as his own. And I know how that feels. I feel the soft stealing, and suddenly this child is my child. And I tell you, it gets even better, because someday they come home with grandchildren, and that is the biggest miracle of all. Your grandchildren love you in ways your children just don't. So I understand Joseph. When he was about 11 years old or so, they went to the temple. They went to church over in Jerusalem. And Jesus was in the temple, and he realized, you know, I'm the Son of God. I'm going to go to work here. And he went to work debating with the preachers and those in the... And he got so busy. He was so energetic and so busy there doing his thing that he got left. The van left without him, and they went a long ways. I can imagine how fast they drove on the way back, hoping that he hadn't fallen out of the van somewhere on the way. And they get back there, and they find Jesus, and they say, hey, what are you doing? And I'm sure there was emotion, and I'm sure they meant it. Like, what are you doing? And Jesus said, well, you know I'm God's son. You know I'm supposed to be here. And they say, yeah, we know you're God's son, but right now you're our little boy. We want you to get in the van and come with us, so to speak. And it says Jesus got in and went home with them and was subject unto them. And I think there's a real principle there that Jesus is trying to teach us. You know, remember, we have the image of God, right? We have that knowledge, and Jesus gave us the example. Now you go bow that knowledge to the authorities and to the Joseph and Mary in your life, to mom and dad. You bow that. You bow your will to them. And Jesus, that's what he did. You know, 15 years later or so, when he's 30 years old, he's at a wedding. And he was just there at the wedding, probably doing what boys do at weddings, wishing he could be out hunting pigs or something. And there he is at that wedding, and they ran out of wine. And his mom said to the people that needed wine, they said, go ask Jesus and he'll fill them with wine. He'll help you. Do what he says. His mom started his call, his freedom to become son of God came when his parents released him, and that's an important concept too. Parents, you need to release your children. You gotta you take them, and the goal is to educate, walk across the bridge into adulthood, and then let them go. That's the goal of parenting. They have a job to do, and as parents, we get out of the way. We release them, and that's what Mary did. She said, "It's time to go, Joseph. It's time to go, Jesus. It's time to go." And he said, "Woman, what are you saying?" And she didn't even reply. She didn't engage. She said, "Just go to work." And then we meet Jesus in the river, and he's down in the river, and he's being baptized. And we see God adopting Jesus. He comes down there in the spirit of a dove, and his voice comes from heaven, and he says, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. I choose this Son of mine. He's my Son." And then he does his miracles. And Brother Lee was telling me last night when he studies for a devotion, for his sermons, he said that he finds it's better if he waits kind of till the last minute. It pushes him a little, and he finds himself doing things in the last minute. You know, the last 2 weeks of Jesus' life is when most of his work got done. So there must be a principle there. There's something about being pushed, and there's something about a deadline. And we find Jesus here in Matthew 25, 35 to 50. And I'm just going to read this. So if you want to follow along, this story is worth following along in. Matthew 25, verse 35. Peter said unto him, "Though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee." Likewise also said all the disciples. Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, "Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder." And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, "My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me." And he went a little farther and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." And he cometh unto the disciples, and he findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, "What? Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak." And he went away again the second time and prayed, saying, "O my Father, if this cup may not pass from me, except I drink it, thy will be done." And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples, and saith unto them, "Sleep on now, and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me." And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came with him a great multitude with swords and staves for the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave him a sign, and saying, "Whomsoever shall I kiss, the same is he. Hold him fast." And forthwith he came to Jesus and said, "Hail, Master," and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, "Friend, wherefore art thou come?" Then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him. So all I want to see tonight is the choice Jesus made. We see his choice to choose his earthly family, and now we see him choosing to do his job. And I know how that feels sometimes. I can understand. Sometimes we know what our job is, We wish it wasn't written in the sky. We wish it wasn't everywhere right in front of us. It'd be a whole lot easier if we didn't know what our job is. A couple stories from my family. These two stories are about two of my daughters, Kendra and Alex. First one is, it's hard to understand and comprehend in life why the innocent suffer. Why they have to suffer the consequences of someone else's sin is especially hard to comprehend and understand and accept. The first five children Gene and I adopted were born to a mother who, at the time she was having them, lived on the streets, doing drugs, and all that that means. And it's a very hard life. Kendra was 9 years old when she came to us, but before that she had to make some really hard choices. She was nine and the youngest was a year and a half old. Sometimes there was food in the house. If you call dried up noodles food. Sometimes there were Pampers in the house. And lots of times there wasn't either. Sometimes they stayed overnight at the same house. But they lived here and there on the streets and in bedrooms. And they tell the story of a night when they were in a house somewhere. We now know generally where the house is. And there were cops outside the door. There were men in the trees behind them running from the cops. They sat in raw terror behind little bedroom doors and under the beds. And this was just that. This was life. This was their life. And we can choose to leave our Amish roots. We can choose to assimilate into the world. I'm not going to argue whether or not there'll be people in heaven that aren't Amish. There might not be as many as we think sometimes. But we can't assimilate into the world and do what the world is doing and have Christmases like the Amish do. And that's something to think about. It's quite a story. It really connects. And these little girls and boys were being abused in all the ways that you can imagine. They're being abused, along with no food and no clothes. And in the midst of that, they loved their mom, felt protection for her, tried to be parents to the mom, tried to be parents to each other, tried to do, because we're human, that's what we do. We care for each other. Just because your mom makes bad choices and does drugs and is an alcoholic doesn't mean you quit loving her. Because your dad is angry and hits you doesn't mean you don't love your dad. That doesn't magically take that away. It's just really, really hard. Well, the family got turned into the state, to the DHS, and the DHS came out there. And Kendra was presented with a choice. Does she tell the truth about what's really going on? Or does she pretend like everything's okay? And she told the truth. She said what's really going on. And that meant they got taken away from their biological mom. You know, God had prepared a home for them. He had laid on our hearts. We had one little girl and she wanted siblings, and we had a big house with lots of bedrooms. We told the Lord, if you want to use this house and you want to fill these bedrooms up, then then we'll get certified as adopted, and we'll do our part. And Lord, if you want somebody to come, you bring them. And you know, all the timing of God. And this was right before Thanksgiving when Kendra was 9, October. And the caseworker called my wife when I was at work, and she said, "Hey, we have 5 little children, and they need a home. Would you can they come to your place?" And Gina said, "I can't take 5 children at once." She said, "Well, if they don't come, we have to split the family up. And they'll only be there for 2 weeks. I think we can get this family back together. I think we can do it. So just give me 2 weeks." And Gina called me and said, "What should we do?" "Well, I'm the oldest brother of 9. You don't split families up." So I said, "Well, I'll work along. I think it'll be fine." And I said, "Gina, you can do it. It'll be okay." And I don't know what you told the caseworker, actually. I just know that about a day or two later, maybe it was that day, this van shows up with 5 little children in it. And they come into the house. And just little children come in playing, laughing, full of things. And it was really interesting for us to watch Kendra especially. She wouldn't do anything bad. She said she wouldn't. She watched us all the time, and she was very careful. She would. After a while, I was like, "Man, I'm gonna be relieved when this little girl finally does something bad. She's holding herself in so tight. She's so terrified that she's going to break the spell. That she's not really alive." So when I see little children being bad, it gives me I know it's frustrating to parents, but it's a lot worse actually if they're never bad. And so they came into our home, and had a big Thanksgiving. They were there for Thanksgiving, and the time went by, and the story goes on, and the 10 days went by, and then it was 10 years, and they're still in our family. And they did actually get their mom back together, and their mom lives on our property in a house, her and her husband, and go to our church, is at all the family gatherings, part of their story. But she healed after they were adopted. Before they were adopted, she would have visits. And Kendra was at the visit, and she'd come home from these visits, and she was very upset. And that's when we put into place what we've been doing here at this church. We did small groups in our family. We call them family councils. Once a week, we sit around and we talk about real problems. So what's been bothering you? After a while, it kind of came out of her. She said, "I just feel so guilty for where my mom is and that the family's broke up. I feel so bad." At one of the last visits, mom told us the reason we're not together is because you tattled to the DHS. And so she had to work through that guilt. She had to do what she did, the right thing as a little girl. Didn't think about this like Jesus did and accepting what she had to do, but she did it instinctively, what was best for her children, for her siblings. And my last story tonight is about the next daughter, Alex. And when she came there that evening with her hair cut short to her, above her ears, and her teeth crooked, full of laughter and chatter. She always was one of the bright spots of our little tribe. But the story I want to tell you about her tonight is a story that's it's a harder story. She grew up and married the love of her life, and they struggle now to have children. They struggle for some reason. Very likely the effects of some of the lifestyle choices maybe that her mom made, and also just I don't know why. I don't know why God doesn't let some families, some couples that want children have children. I don't. And why he lets some that seem so incapable of parenting have children. I don't know if we can give a test or something that there'd be a way to address that, but so far there isn't. So I guess we'll leave it in the hands of God. But they really wanted to have their own biological children. And I would always tease her and say, well, you know, there is a way to get children. I've proved that. In fact, you know, I would pray to God and tell him there's bedrooms upstairs. And then finally I was praying to God, hey, the bedrooms are full. And he kept on filling. And so if you're ever open to that, you know, I have never had any biological children. I'm pretty happy, Alex, just throwing that out there. She would say, Dad, but that's not really what I want. I'm not so sure we know what we want, but sometimes God lets us figure it out. I don't think we do know what we want. I think God knows. God has a plan for us. And I think when we finally break and we finally are willing, we're just pretty happy where God wants us. And right now they have two little boys in their home that they're fostering. And those two little boys, in January, the DHS was supposed to come take them from their home and take them home, take them back to their mom. Supposedly their mom was off drugs and had her life back together, and they were supposed to go back. And Alex, at Christmas, she was like, Dad, can we pray? Help me pray that the boys can stay. And I had to kind of smile to myself, you know, from not wanting them, not wanting to do this, to really, really scared they're going to go back. How does that happen? It's a miracle God takes care of. We just be faithful and it happens. Okay. It's time for our small groups. I want to do the small groups. When we're done with the small groups, I'll come back and hear from all of you, and then I have two prayers I want to leave you with tonight, so we will do that. So now, as we go into our small group, from the talks that I gave and from each voice that you heard from each other, when you get to your small group and you start workshopping that, maybe you can pick the two people right away, the one that's gonna tell the common thread, the common theme that you heard this weekend. Are there any commonalities in trauma? Are the stories shared? Is there any shared substance? And then you workshop that together and come up with that and pick a spokesperson to come back and tell us what that is. And then the second piece of it, pick the second person in your small group, and you think about the rod and the staff. You think about the spiritual piece of it, and you think about the physical piece that you found, that people, that we find healing in, an actual house with an actual turkey, actually at Christmas time. And so I'm excited to hear from you what that what those two answers might be. Okay. Do you need a reminder who your groups are? I think everybody knows where you're going and who you are. Okay. And I'll probably, Tim, if we can ring the bell in 10 minutes and then give yourselves a few minutes to get out here.